Tonight's encouragement talk will be given by Fran Ludwig, Dharma teacher.
I'd like to read a passage from Dogen's Mountains and Water Sutra. And this is a different translation than Tanahashi that we've been reading. And it's the one that's used by Shohaku Okumura in his new book on the Sutra, the Mountains and Water Sutra. And this translation is by Carl Bielfeldt. There are a few places where Okumura has have differed with Bielfeldt in translation. So I've done a bit of a mashup in taking mostly Bielfeldt's translation with a few substitutions from Okumura. So this is a passage I'd like to talk about. Although we say that mountains belong to the country, actually they belong to those who love them. When the mountains love their hosts, the wise and virtuous inevitably enter the mountains. And when sages and wise men live in the mountains, because the mountains belong to them, trees and rocks flourish and abound, and the birds and beasts take on a spiritual light. This is because the sages and wise men have covered them with their virtue. The mountains love practitioners, and practitioners love the mountains. Just about every culture and every religion has a creation myth. It's the most common type of myth that we have created as humans. And these creation myths generally fall into one of several broad categories. One is the emergence myth, where the world emerges from some previous world, which is typically described as a womb. And this is a very familiar myth because we talk about Mother Earth and Mother Nature. And the mother of all Buddhas is Great Mother Prajnaparamita, Great Mother of Wisdom. There's another kind of creation myth, and this is called the world parent myth. And these typically have the world being born from the sexual union of two beings. And one of those I'd like to tell you is from the Maori people. And their creation myth goes that there was a sky father and earth mother, and they were locked in this tight embrace. And their children were cramped between them in the darkness. But the children wanted to be in the light. And so they discussed among themselves and tried several ways to separate their parents, and eventually one of them succeeded. And one of the children came to Earth as the wind, and another as the ocean. One became the forest, and another the birds. One became wild food, and another became cultivated food. And Sky Father lived in the heavens, and Earth Mother was the earth. But Sky Father missed his children and Earth Mother, and so he's crying his tears right now, and we can hear them. And Earth Mother missed Sky Father, and if you look out over the bay right now, you'll see the mist rising, and that's Earth Mother's sighs, heaving towards the heavens and Sky Father. One of the things that is interesting about almost all of these creation myths is that the world is born out of love. Even in Christian mythology, the world was created by God. And God is God of love. But somewhere along the line, our culture has lost our myth and our connection to those myths. And these myths are important because they help determine our worldview. And they reveal our priorities and our prejudices. And they reveal our relationship to the world around us. So I started spending some time thinking about the world is lover, because that seems to be part of our primal makeup, buried deep in our DNA. And when I did, I was astonished at how loved and held and sustained I feel by the world. When I walk in the woods, the tree branches reach out to shelter me. The wind blows and caresses me. The grass waves to me, and the ferns bow to me. And even Tori Engy says that our food, clothing, and shelter are the warm body and beating heart of the Buddha. So the world gives us life and sustains us physically as well as emotionally and psychologically. And this is something that Native American cultures have known and practiced and embedded deep in their cultures. Robin Wall Kimmerer has just released a beautiful new book called Braiding Sweetgrass. And Robin Kimmerer has two very interesting perspectives on the world. One, from the wonder of a PhD botanist who marvels at the intricacies of the universe. And she also has a heritage as a Native American. And that informs her connection to the world in very important ways. And one of the things she talks about in her book is language and the language of her heritage. And in her heritage, the word for everything in the natural world is a verb. It's not a noun. For example, what we're sitting by is to be a bay. And she writes this beautiful passage. She says, "To be a bay holds a wonder that for this moment the living water has decided to shelter itself between these shores, conversing with cedar roots and a flock of baby mergansers, because it could do otherwise, become a stream or an ocean or a waterfall." And there are verbs for that too. The forests and the trees are standing people. And the pronouns that are used to refer to the standing people and all other parts of the natural world are personal pronouns, similar to what we would use for he or she, for another person, not it, like a thing. And that really informs how they relate to the world. For example, when they need to harvest a plant, first they ask permission from the plant. And it's only when they're satisfied that the plant has given permission that they gather some. They never take the first plant. They never take the last. They never take more than half of what is there. They use what they take. They share it. And they never waste it. And then in gratitude, they give something back to the earth. So there's a real practice of reciprocity. between Native Americans and the earth. Several things happen when we connect to the earth as lover, or the world as lover. One is we care for things we love. And so, like the Native Americans, we care for the earth. Another thing that can start to happen is that just like lovers, two hearts can start to beat as one. And we just might begin to notice that who we think we are starts to expand and grow. And those raindrops aren't outside of us. They are rising from within us. The breeze doesn't blow on us. It blows through us. The streams and rivers and tides pulse through our veins. Mountains arise within us, and when we walk, the mountains walk. And our arms stretch to infinity and encircle the world in a loving embrace. And lover and beloved begin to disappear. And there's only the pitter-patter of raindrops on the roof. Although we say that mountains belong to the country, actually, they belong to those who are one with them. When the mountains love their hosts, the wise and virtuous inevitably enter the mountains. And when sages and wise men live in the mountains, because the mountains belong to them, trees and rocks flourish and abound, and the birds and beasts take on a spiritual light. This is because the sages and wise men have covered them with their virtue. The mountains love practitioners, and practitioners love mountains.